So here we are at lesson 22. And in this one, we're going to go over an introduction and an overview of the three main competencies of advocacy. So first of all, we're going to look at what advocacy is. It's essentially a set of hands-on technical skills and practices that really are needed to effectively press for change. In other words, you have to have a handle on and understand what kind of change, how you're going to go about it, and why. You need to be motivated, you need to be connected, you need to be thoroughly drenched in the kind of change that you are going to work toward. Advocacy is the foundation of active citizenship, as mentioned in an earlier lesson. Simple representative democracy is not sufficient. It's a necessary part of a democratic society, but without active citizenship, without individuals being involved in social change, their own and others, a democratic country may end up being democratic in name only and not, in fact, a healthy and vital democracy. The moment democracy stops being a vital process, the country, or organization for that matter, will begin to decline. Advocacy is a process through which ordinary people can participate in decision-making at all levels. And what we are doing here is talking about advocacy as it pertains to the United Nations. Now, these competencies are relevant in advocacy at every level. All we're really saying here is that once you know these skills, you can apply them at the community level, at your city level, at your state or national level, or at the global level. It is simply your choice. Now, to be effective in advocacy, you also have to identify your priorities. You need to craft your strategies, not just as an individual, unless you're working alone, of course, and you need to step out and be an integral part of and a leader in your community. Again, whatever community that may be it local, national, or international. And advocacy means not only talking about doing things, but taking action and achieving results. Advocates are not people who sit around telling other people what to do. They are active, building relationships, networking, leveraging their social capital, utilizing their resources, mobilizing resources, and achieving results. An advocate is both empowered and empowers others. They shape their own future and the future of others. And in the end, they simply make a difference. And as they get out and move and shape things and change things, they're also constantly in process of discovering new possibilities, new opportunities, better and expanded ways, or more focused ways to accomplish their objectives and goals. And in the end, once they've achieved one objective or goal, they then also see what can be the next opportunity and goal. Advocates are leaders, leaders of action and of thought. Advocates are on the front lines of change in our society. So now we're going to look at what I call the three core competencies, and I've got here plus one, and I'll get into that in a minute. But first of all, the main competencies of advocacy that are typically understood, first is that of framing, the ability to frame. And in lesson 23, we'll get into the details and the specifics of understanding more clearly what framing is, how it works, why it works, and a series of questions and resources that you can utilize to help you with your framing. Secondly, there is the building and using of social capital. In lesson number 24, we'll look more in depth at what this is, as well as provide you tools and resources and ways of thinking that can help you build and use your social capital. Then there's mobilizing resources, and that we'll deal with in lesson 25. What I'm calling the plus one here is it's a leadership competency that is particularly important for advocates who are some of today's most influential change leaders in our democratic society. Let me explain here why I say this and go into a little bit more about the leadership competencies I see are needed by advocates. Now, advocates often work in an environment of wrongs, abuse, and victimization, and they can be reactive or responsive. And here I distinguish between the two. Those who react as advocates, they're coming back at an injustice, a violation, with little more than thoughts of retribution, retaliation, and revenge. The problem with basing advocacy on reaction is that, and we'll get into this more carefully in the lesson on framing, that we sadly reinforce the set of values, interpretations, and actions that resulted in these violations in the first place, that the ones that we're reacting to. So we're playing in the same sandbox, and the only alternative outcomes in this particular instance is to really end up becoming the bigger, badder, stronger version of what we're statedly opposing. Now, the responsive advocate, on the other hand, takes the time to make an important shift. We'll look at some of the ways that we can do this, and what I mean by this is we look at empowerment map a little bit later on in this lesson. After making that shift, then the advocate comes back to the situation having made a contribution to the overall situation because they put the energy, time, and thought into constructing an alternate and new way forward. Next, advocates are in a position to leverage the strong emotions that arise when there is injustice, violation, and greed. And they too can use that power effectively, well, to genuinely upgrade the whole situation or to simply react and respond and get some kind of emotional satisfaction in the moment. Now, a lot of the time, sadly, advocates end up simply redistributing existing power, resources, and or emotional satisfaction, and often are unable to or haven't done the work that is necessary to upgrade, to elevate, to transform existing situations and circumstances in a more progressive and constructive way. Plus one advocates, however, add new vision and energy into the existing system of energy, so to speak, through what I call generative leadership, and that provides positive solutions. So let me explain just a tiny little bit more what I mean by this. Plus one advocates actually change their focus from that on redistribution of existing resources and issues of legitimacy, which are a natural result from being problem or pathology focused and centered around the question, quote, what causes or maintains the problem and how can we change this or how can we address this? Instead, they pursue a different answer to a different question. And that question is, how do we construct solutions? Now, the same problem is assumed in both cases. But in terms of the solution that is sought, one case focuses on what causes the problem and how can we change those causes. The other one is what is the goal and how do we construct the solutions from where we are. The questions are dramatically different and the outcomes and the answering of those questions also provides very different ways forward. Part of what my approach to advocacy here is that it assumes certain leadership competencies. Now, just very quickly going into leadership for a moment, it's really a complex issue. It's been studied by so many. You just go onto Google, you can find 120, approximately, 120 million web pages that deal with the topic of leadership. It is one of the most studied out there. The definition that I work with in relation to advocacy is as a capacity to engage, influence, and transform. But it's the leadership that also I focus on is rooted in the intersection of our self-leadership, our own experience, and our personal sense of mission and commission, according to the organizations that we work with. And leadership is a choice, not as a position. Now, people who choose to take leadership, who take up the a leadership component in their work, may also have a leadership position, but it's not that position that I'm referring to in the context of this work. The solutions-focused leadership that I'm assuming, or that I speak about as generative leadership, is one that works to construct solutions. Doesn't assume that they're, quote-unquote, out there somewhere to find, to stumble across, and to unearth. But in fact, it is we who are in this situation and circumstance who are observing, participating, and even if it's just those few who intend to make a difference, the most important element of that kind of leadership in its solutions focus is that it is constructive. It works to create those solutions. Now, this kind of leadership is grounded in a profound respect for the dignity, resourcefulness, and potential of each person, including the very vulnerable, including the victims, including those who have been the most violated in any particular situation. And that is to still, in a sense, redignify them by acknowledging they still have the greatest power to reconstruct their own situation and circumstance. Now, that doesn't deny their need for support, encouragement, empowerment, resources, physical and other enabling resources that they may need. That's an of course, but that at the core of the work, that there is a redignifying of those individuals through recognizing that they are the ones who can most powerfully, most profoundly reconstruct their situation. Now, the leadership also that I speak of is distributive in action. And what I mean by that, it doesn't hoard power, it doesn't hoard resources, doesn't hoard any of the elements that are needed to achieve any specific outcomes, but rather shifts the ownership, resources, and currency out, especially via mastery, purpose, and autonomy of the individuals. And all of these things are not done in one step, not just done as a mandate, not just done because it should or should not be done, but these are part of the processes that generative leaders engage those that they are working with. Now, generative leadership, again, constructs solutions, does not simply discover them as if they're out there to be found somewhere on the sidewalk. Generative leadership is inclusive. It notices values and builds from the small, as well as leveraging existing strengths and the more obvious power and resources that exist within communities and society. And generative leadership assumes that there is more than one solution. In other words, no one person has the sole ownership of an answer or a solution. No one person is the sole provider of solutions. Generative leadership also facilitates, empowers, and helps model the process of change. These are key characteristics of generative leadership. Now, this solutions-focused and generative, and I sometimes use these two phrases interchangeably, but the important thing is that in the advocacy context, they do the work in advance, and a lot of that is done through the framing and the planning, the social network building, and the mobilization of resources that we'll get into in the next couple of lessons. They do that work in advance. Advocates do not come to their key prospects, the diplomats or the key personnel in the United Nations Secretariat, with an unthought out what they should do. Instead, they come with something substantive to offer. Recommendations, outlines, supportive materials, and resources, bringing the solution at least in a pilot project phase to those who they are approaching. So they help work to bring them a clear thought out plan that shows people how their problem can be solved quicker and easier than otherwise thought. Now here I just want to note that this quote unquote quicker and easier solving of the problem is not just hype. When the advocate and the NGO have in fact done that advanced work naturally, getting to the solution will be quicker and easier. Here I want to go very quickly through this empowerment map that I referred to earlier. It provides a very useful and easy to utilize framework for making a shift from being problem-focused to solution-focused. And I've divided this empowerment map into three main areas, that is the language or frame shift that is being dealt with, the line of inquiry or the questions that can be asked, and the empowering ease or the mnemonics to help you remember, therefore utilize the elements of this empowerment map. The first step is to shift from a focus on what I don't want to a focus on what I do want. And the line of inquiry that helps us focus in on this change is the question, what is the goal? And the empowering E in this case is, what do we want in the end? The end is what we need to focus on here. All too often, we can articulate precisely what we don't want perfectly. But ask somebody what it is they do want, what it would look like, what it would feel like, what it would sound like. And you'll often be met with silence. But practically speaking, how can we construct our world to result in something that we have no idea what it looks, sounds, or feels like? How can we shift from being so immersed in the problem unless we spend some time articulating clearly what it is that we do want? The next E is that of evidence. In other words, when do the little pieces of that happen? Now, when we're problem-focused, we're constantly looking and usually find not just little bits, but plenty as to why things go wrong. When we're solutions focused, we're looking amongst the massive amounts of things that perhaps do go wrong and finding those little gems, those little nuggets of when things go right. Those exceptions are powerful indicators of the possibility, and it's evidence in our own life that things can be different than what seems to be the predominant reality. But what is critical in this is that we do pick up and focus on the exceptions of when things do go right. Next, we often look at and focus on and bemoan the forces beyond our control. The shift that needs to take place that is much more empowering means that we then begin to focus on those things within our control. Sometimes even getting that one shift for somebody who has been violated and is so consumed with the injustice, or is dealing with people who have been violated and they, even though it's not happened to them, are so consumed by the injustice of it that in fact they don't begin to look at what can be changed. They stay so connected and wrapped up in and entangled and meshed with the forces that are beyond their control that they don't begin to engage in the construction of solutions. And this is another place skilled advocates can help. When we look at what is within our control, we can then begin to ask, how did I do that? And how can I build that expertise and capacity? And how can I do more of that? As we look at these seemingly small changes, I do want to ask you not to underestimate the impact of these small shifts. The next empowering E is effect and difference. In this case, language goes from I'm stuck and I'm feeling like there's no hope, there's no way out, there is nothing to look forward to, and so on, to looking at and focusing on what I'm progressing in. What good things came from the progress that I want more of, and that we would like to see more of. And then we begin to reinforce that progress and the feeling and the belief in that progress. The final one is to look at the language shift from expecting there to be more troubles to a focus on looking at what positive possibilities are coming down the road, what's next, and building an expectation, an energized interest and curiosity to explore more of what can be constructed and to focus in on that. The more that we can engage and interact with and in our internal dialogue and our external dialogue with those that we're working with on the positive possibilities, to shift from their getting their feelings out and frustrations out about the problems to looking at what they want, when things go right, what forces are within their control, the ways in which they have progressed, even if they're small, and what they might be able to look forward to. Even if it's just small progress and on a scale of 1 to 10, it begins at 1. And can, within a day or 2 days or a week, can shift to 2. Then even that progress, shifting along the scale, can be seen as progress in the right direction that can then shift from 2 to 3 and gives the potential to shift all the way up to 9 and even 10. This empowerment map outlines an enormously powerful process and is a key tool for the generative leader. And with this, I'm going to bring us into today's homework. I want you just to look at the point that caught your attention most in this particular lesson, or one that you had not thought about before and that you can see might be useful to you, and how you think that might be so. That's it for today. I look forward to seeing you in our next lesson.